Rewind and Digress is a FakeShame.net podcast proudly presented by Viewlorium. Alternative movies, alternative streaming, totally free at Viewlorium.com.
Welcome to Rewind and Digress, where we hit pause on the now and track back to one of our favourite films, share a roof with it, argue over whose turn it is to wash the dishes, pick its pubes off the soap, bitch behind its back, and love it like a housemate. I'm Jarrett, and I'm with Glenn, and we're FakeShemp.net. On this episode, we're rewinding back to 2014 for writer-director Gerard Johnston's wildly entertaining comedy horror, Housebound. Now, Glenn,
yes.
Very first question, sir. Hi, by the way, I haven't actually said hello to you.
G'day.
So good to see you.
It's good to be here, mate.
Excellent. Well, now, let's get right into it. When was the first time you saw Housebound?
I reckon it was just the usual when it got released on Blu-ray.
Blu-ray
was the first. In fact, I remember you gave me a slick.
That's correct.
With the director's signature. He autographed it.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I had the cover without the disc.
Right.
So I was like, oh, everyone's raving about this film. I've got to see it. And it just took for so long. And at the time, I owned a video store, and I remember an opportunity for an X rental. And I'm like, oh, that's going in my cover. You know, that's
beautiful.
Going in my basket.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and that's when I saw it. And to be honest with you, I found the film really underwhelming when I first watched it.
Oh, right. Upon the first viewing.
Second viewing, I found it really underwhelming.
Wow.
I've got to admit.
And okay, so the third viewing.
So
you've watched it three times, though. That's pretty good.
Four times.
Oh, shock
you. The third viewing, I found it really underwhelming.
Oh, my God.
And then I watched it again last night.
Right.
Slightly better.
Oh my God. I thought fourth time might be the charm in this instance. Okay,
there's a lot of things I like about
this. I feel like it's funny because there's something I'm going to touch on later in the episode. I kind of liken the film a little to Cabin in the Woods, and you've told me that you didn't enjoy Cabin in the Woods, so it doesn't surprise me that you don't enjoy Housebound. Blows my mind again, but yeah.
No, but for different reasons.
Right, okay. Oh, well, we'll touch on them as we go.
Okay.
First time I saw this film, I missed it at MIFF. It played MIFF in 2014, but I caught up with it, I think about a month later in Sydney. It played Sydney Underground Film Festival. It was the opening night film, and I actually had my short budget cuts. Play
yes.
in Sydney at that festival. So I was there to see the film and I fucking loved it, man. Like, I was really blown away with it. I mean, there'd been a strong resurgence of New Zealand cinema at the time, and particularly New Zealand genre cinema, and I was just floored. I'd heard nothing of the film except that it had played MIFF and I probably should have seen it. And so seeing it, I was just... Yeah, it was like genuinely good suspense. Like, people jumped and you could feel the whole room jump. The jokes hit, everything sort of just worked. And I remember walking out of the cinema and talking about the movie maybe for about an hour or so while I drank free booze. But yeah, I was like floored the first time I watched it.
It's really funny though, because everything you've said is true. Like, jokes all hit their mark, right?
Yeah,
the things that hit true there with what you said, we've reacted differently too.
Right.
Because I watch it and I recognize the humor, like... There's a really strong New Zealand sense of humour. And
absolutely.
And I would like, a bit later on to talk about what is New Zealand humour. Because it's unique to anything else.
Totally,
right? But there's something about this film that I cannot get into. I think the pacing is slightly off.
Okay,
I think it's a very slow burn film.
It is slow, yeah.
And I think the final act is fantastic.
Terrific. Yeah.
Takes so fucking long to get there, though.
I just love the journey. Because, I mean, like, and I'll touch on it later about the tonal shift throughout the film. Because it's about three films in one, the different types of films.
There are things about the journey that I love.
For that all works for me.
There are things I love about the journey, and I'll talk about them when we get to that moment. But, I don't know. Look, I'm going to go back for the fifth time.
Well, right? I applaud you for that. Like, that's great. Like, you might have actually watched this film more times than I had. I think I've seen it three times.
You know what I'm like with films, too? I'm dogged. I keep at them like a dog gnaws at a bone, right? And because I watch this and I know there's more to it than what I'm getting. And so I go back and I go back and I go. I do it with so many films that I don't like. And
I agree. I do it with some films as
well. Death Machine's another one. People say, why do you go back to that? And I'm like, well, because I think there's something really cool in here and I don't know how to articulate it or what.
And one day it's just going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to work for you. Look, let me tell you a bit about the film for the listeners that haven't seen it. This is the studio synopsis. This is what is on the back of the slick. And it says, Kylie Bucknell is forced to return to the house she grew up in when court places her on home detention. Her blubbermouth mother, Miriam, is convinced the house is haunted. When Kylie is, too becomes privy to the strange happening, she wonders if she's inherited her mother's overactive imagination or if the house is indeed possessed by a hostile spirit who's not particularly happy about her return. It's a reasonable synopsis. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in these movies. It's kind of hard to wrap it up into
how do we talk about this without spoilers?
No, we've got to. Clearly, you've got to spoil the shit out of the movie.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've not watched Housebound, you need to come back to this podcast and have a listen afterward because there is no way really to talk about the movie without spoiling it because I'm going to spoil it.
So we've got a friend of FakeShamp.net who runs a very successful paranormal investigation group called Access Paranormal. You'll see their logo on our homepage on our website. I've told her to get ahead and watch this before she listens to the podcast, right? Because there are things about paranormal investigation in this film that are so accurate.
Right.
Very, very accurate. You know the security guard that...
Yes,
you
know, Amos.
Yeah, Amos. Yeah. The moment that he flips into mode, right?
Yeah.
You know that moment he realizes, hang on, there's a haunting here.
Yeah, it's totally good.
And he goes from security guard to serious paranormal investigator,
right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
The way that he's portrayed is absolutely uncanny in its depiction. I've been around these people.
I've been around a few of them myself,
Yeah. And they're exactly like him, totally. Right? And I've told her, look, you've got to watch this film. You've got to listen to our podcast. Mm. But yeah, spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen it,
stop now.
Pause now, come back. It's not hard to track down. It is, I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix or Stan. It's on one of the streaming services in Australia. You won't have any difficulty tracking it down. It is a bit tricky to find on DVD and Blu-ray. I noticed it's not on the JB Hi-Fi website. I don't know if it's on Amazon. But I'm sure you can jump on eBay and pick it up cheaply.
You can watch it on YouTube for $4.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So it's on YouTube. Now, look, I guess I want to move into the casting sort of the film. Morgana O'Reilly, she plays the lead of Kylie. And I think she's like really well cast as this angsty sort of anti-social 20-something. She's very attractive. Yeah, absolutely. And funnily enough, throughout the film, because apparently the black dye was really, you know, just... I don't know what does to ladies' hairs. It ruins the lady hair.
Yeah.
So she refused to refused to keep dyeing it, and subsequently is wearing wigs throughout. I mean, it's pretty good because I didn't tell. And
no.
I listened to the commentary and I was like, "Oh, it's a wig. Ah, oh, maybe if I watched it with Danny might have picked up on it." But no. Anyway, she plays the role incredibly well.
She does.
A brat, and you feel bad for the way she treats her mum, but at the same time, you can kind of identify with her maybe from your teenage years or so, and she's still somewhat likable. And I mean, that's
she's a grown adult with teenage angst. She's a she child.
Yeah, totally. Because she'd be in her mid-20s, would you say?
Yeah.
They never really give her a year, but
30.
Say... Yeah, late 20s maybe. Sadly, I don't think she's really gone on to do an awful lot of stuff. I had a look and she was on like 2 seasons of Neighbours about a year after the movie
came out.
She
wrote a TV series
that
had 4 episodes.
Ah.
Don't recall the name of it, but...
Was it a New Zealand? I imagine a New Zealand TV series.
It would have been. I don't know what it was.
It's a shame because a lot of talent that works within New Zealand don't really seem to... get to work outside of New Zealand. I mean, they do have a very great film industry in Auckland with a lot of productions.
Most of the cast,
over.
If you actually look them up, same with any New Zealand film, they cross over to Australia and do a lot of Australian stuff.
Like, yeah,
that's it.
They have an Australian stint maybe and then end up back in New Zealand, you know. Anyway, moving on, Rima T.
Wiata.
Yeah. So she hadn't really been working a lot. She'd been out of the industry for a while, kind of came back, did this film since she's had a bit of a renaissance.
Because before this, she was probably best known for Full Frontal.
Yeah, back in the early 90s, maybe 93 or something, the Eric Bana era.
Which is why I knew her face when I first saw her in it. Like, I'm like, I know this woman. And then she pops up in Hunt for the Wilder People.
And she's terrific.
Oh my God.
Heartbreaking.
What a character actress.
Incredible. And she's going to be in that new film, The Breaker Uppers, which I'm really looking forward to seeing.
She is the what I'm talking about with the New Zealand humour. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, she gets it. Like, I don't know what do you think New Zealand comedy or humor is.
It's sort of strange, man. Like, it's hard to put my finger on it. It's that offbeat kind of quirky humor, but not in a Jared Hess or Wes Anderson way. It's like a very natural type of comedy, but it's still...
It's something that Australian comedy tries to do, but never does.
We
never
can't
gets.
Do it, yeah.
I think I was sitting there watching it thinking, what is it that, you know, and applies to everything from Peter Jackson through to, you know, what they do in the shadows, all this kind of stuff. Mm. It's got to be the attention to irrelevant details.
Right.
She obsessed, like when, the hilarious moment when she wants to watch Coronation Street.
Oh, yes.
Right. And she starts begging and getting upset because she can't watch her TV show. That's an irrelevant detail.
Totally.
But there's so much attention and focus put on it. And I think that's it. And there's also that little guy syndrome in New Zealand. I think that sort of plays into it too. Sort of they're isolated from the world, so everything's self-referential.
Yeah.
And obviously the accent kind of makes it irreverent.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to say, is there a part of you that can kind of liken it in a way, not necessarily liken it as in like it's the same, but in a similar manner to like Canadian sort of humor? Like some Canadian TV shows are very like
there's actually
their own thing. Like
I've never really made that correlation before, but yeah, there's definitely that, and that's the same little guy syndrome. Like they're kind of they share a border with the biggest nation, like the most prolific nation in the world, and so there is definitely that.
They have that rivalry too, back and forth.
And they have that funny accent.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Funny accent helps.
It's unique accent,
you know. And I think they also recognise they've got a funny accent, so they play upon it, just like the New Zealanders.
Totally, you know. Totally.
Yeah, so look, these are things I like about the film. Like I said before, the comedy is amazing.
You've got to listen to the commentary track, having the three New Zealanders, you know, the director, producer, and the other producer, executive producer.
That might be the pop moment.
It's fantastic. It's pretty funny. Could be. Could very well be. Glenn Paul Waruru plays Amos. I believe from the commentary track, he used to host a hip-hop show. and where one of the locations where they shot the film was a bit of a bad area, but the neighboring kids were all big fans of him from his, you know, VJ years hosting that hip hop program.
So they came and got photos with him. Jabber.
Yeah, absolutely. funnily, he actually went to school with Jared Johnson as well, the director.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, he's a show stealer for me in this one.
He's terrific. His timing is so good. And
the scene when he's in hiding underneath the canopy of the ute. Fantastic.
Yeah, no, he's terrific. It's a shame, though. I had a look on IMDb, and outside of doing some voice work on kids' animator programs in New Zealand, it doesn't seem like he's doing too much in front of the camera. Damn shame, if you ask me. Then the only other actor I really want to mention is Cameron Rhodes, as the film's real villain. I mean, that's obviously a spoiler right there. He oozes predatory cringe, and that's even before we know that he's the actual villain in it. I mean, like, there's something perverse and sleazy about him.
As far as a back catalogue, he's probably the most prolific of all the actors, isn't
he? I'd say so.
Lord of the Rings.
You look at his IMDb, he's only been sort of in the business since 92, but the guy has done like a lifetime of work.
Well, you know what? He's got a great character actor face.
He does, doesn't he?
You know?
And hence why he's probably ended up in like so many series of Power Rangers.
Well, I look at him and I immediately associate Peter Jackson. I'm like, he's the kind of actor you imagine. Like, he could have played that guy at the start of Brain Dead that says, you know, there's some Dettol in the Jeep. He's that kind of character actor. So he fits the mold brilliantly.
Right. Now, touching on just quickly on themes. This film almost has one of your favourite themes in films, which is, you know, generally the returning home sort of character. Like, she's, you know,
that's one of your nostalgic things.
I figured that might be one of the draws for the film for you. It's interesting, though.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Yeah. The bigger draw for me is the one location setting.
That's great. I think it was shot in three locations.
But you know how I am with sound stages and stuff?
It's a confined setting. Yeah.
The confined setting, it takes me back to The Frighteners and things like that. You know, it's very much along those lines.
You've also got dysfunctional family, the building of that family bond, you know, between the mother and the daughter, you know, they're at... It ends with one another, and they're brought together by the events of the film, the outsider aspect of Kylie's character, the loser makes good aspect. I mean, there's a lot sort of happening in the themes department for a film that's a comedy horror.
Yeah.
But, you know, that said, I will touch briefly on tone.
Yep.
Is that you've kind of got like these three different tones to it. You've got that paranormal sort of paranormal horror. You've got kind of like a detective, like a murder mystery detective sort of thing. And then you've got you've got the, you know, the comedy aspect of it as well, you know. So it's like, and I don't know if there's any more, but I mean, it's a weird, because it's a lot of things
it's
to
a
balance.
It's a crock pot.
It's a lot of things to balance. And I mean, even comedy is a little bit slapstick at time. Or what do they call it in the Evil Dead films? Splatstick sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's that gory sort of humor that comes into play as well.
It really, it plays and manipulates the classic tropes of the genre.
Yeah.
Right? So it's hilarious and scary in equal measure.
Yeah.
So what a lot of filmmakers do really well in these sort of films is that they throw a joke at you so you're laughing, and then they frighten the shit out of you when you're when you're not expecting
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And that's what this does. And I think, essentially, overall, the film subverts the genre completely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the final act, the revelations, I didn't see them coming when I first saw it.
No, I didn't either.
Like, there's a real subversion going on here. Because you are convinced you know where it's going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we can spoil some things. Like, clearly, I think I actually spoiled it. We did an interview with Jerry Johnson back in 2014 or 2015, maybe, when the Blu-ray came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the questions I asked him was People Under the Stairs and Black Christmas.
His first
response and he's like,
spoiler.
Spoiler. because, you know, clearly they are. And he said he'd revisited them. Like,
you know what?
You mentioned The Frighteners as well.
I did. I'm surprised that he didn't ask us to leave that out.
Yeah, no. But then he could have also asked me to leave out the question where I said, is there any reason you shot this film at 25 frames per second instead of 24 frames? And he goes, basically we fucked up, or something up to that equivalent.
I've put that in my notes because I found that hilarious.
So funny, because I'm like, should we put that? Yeah, of course we'll put that in there.
But that's inspirational to up-and-coming filmmakers. Can fuck up and it doesn't matter.
Totally. And that's the funny thing too. That's a little bit of background on the film. It was shot over a period of 4 years. So it's something that may have happened early in the process. They kind of realised maybe they couldn't kind of reverse
it
at
that
point.
We've come too far.
Exactly. Yeah. We've just got to kind of keep doing it. It was made for about $250,000 and a lot of favours by the commentary. You know, they pulled in favours left, right and centre. Even the security van, the Titan security van,
yep,
I think was Amos's parents, well, character's name Amos, Glenn Paul's parents' van, I think, from memory.
Yeah, right.
And they had to drive around with that Titan security on there the entire time while they shot this film. So it's crazy to think. But I mean, it's a film that looks like a hell of a lot of more money.
Yeah.
And
you would never guess it took so long to film. You would think that this is something that they've done very professionally, very quickly.
Yeah,
hell yeah. I think the color grading helps that.
Oh yeah,
color grading does wonders.
It has an incredible grade to it, to be honest. That was one of the things I picked up. It just looks nice,
and that color grading leaps off the poster.
I was gonna say, it marries, it's a perfect marriage with the poster, because there's green tones and everything else.
Were you gonna mention the poster later?
The poster comes up, well, not really. The poster comes up when I talk about the DVD or Blu-ray at the end of the program. But if you've got anything to add about the poster, by all means,
we may
do
as well
it
get
now.
It out of the way while we're on the subject. I think it's a fantastic poster. The poster is definitely what appeals to me the most about this one. Yep. You've got the classic title font, which is from House,
which, yes, I was gonna mention in a different part, but that'll lead me into the next bit. Keep going.
Well, not only is it from House, I think there's a very Hellraiser element to title font anyway. Yeah. I mean, there's not much other relation to Hellraiser, but the title font kind of blends in with that. The sort of the painting element of the images. I think actually the main chick looks a lot like Ashley Lawrence from Hellraiser. I think that's what draws me into the Hellraiser
See
element.
That?
It's just a really, really cool...
It's great. And the art, I mean, works as its own piece of salesmanship. Like, it's fantastic. But it almost... That art came out during this era of internet memes where you had awkward family photos.
Yeah,
and it does have that awesome awkwardness to it. Like, everyone's super awkward on that. Like,
it's got American Gothic kind of feel to it. Like, yeah, absolutely. And it's olive green color palette.
So, actually, touching on that, I just want to go back to how we said the title treatment looked like House.
Yeah.
That is a great segue into the next part where I digress. I want to actually ask you, you know, this is a comedy horror. Essentially, when you break it down, it's a comedy horror.
Absolutely.
What's a few of your favorite comedy horrors?
Well, immediately, Brain Dead.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's like the pinnacle for me. Evil Dead, obviously. Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Comedy horror. I love House 2, you know I do.
Oh, yeah, the second story. You love it.
Why do I love that?
I don't know. That's a film that I always come back and one day, will it just work for me?
Why
I don't hate it, but
I
just...
Why did I ask that question? I know it. Why I love it. It's like stop motion animation.
It's a combination of all those things you like. Adventure.
The adventure. It's like they walk into the Lost World and it's Jurassic Park and Bill Maher is in it. How weird is that?
It's a bit of Western element. It's got a...
Is it John Ratzenberger's in it?
Yeah, because you had Norm in the first one. And I don't remember his name.
From Cheers?
Yeah, George Wendt. is the one from the original House.
Yeah, anyway, The Mailman is in part two.
Yeah.
Comedy horrors, what else? I actually love, there's one called Doghouse with Danny Dyer.
Oh, that's not a bad one. Zombie horror. I like that, actually. Comedy horror. He's a great actor. I like him. Like, in those kind of movies, Severance and that.
He's fantastic. He just made headlines for his controversial comments on some Today Show with Piers Morgan over the last few days.
So he's still relevant.
He's still relevant because he's in, what's that famous British soap?
EastEnders?
Yes, he's on EastEnders.
Oh, wow. Kind of like the Coronation Street.
Yeah.
New Zealand.
That's it. So.
Right.
Anyway, digression, massive.
Massive.
What about you?
Yeah, when you end up talking about EastEnders. Yeah. Well, House, 1985's House, directed by Steve Miner, written by Ethan Wiley and Fred Decker, wrote the story. I love it. I think it's the quintessential horror comedy. It's fantastic. I quite draw a bit of a comparison between these two. I mean, it's more obviously on the paranormal horror aspect than having the murder mystery or anything like that to it. But House is like my all-time favorite comedy horror. Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, hell yeah.
Absolute classic.
Yeah, we're going to have to cover that on this. On our franchise. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'd be dying to do it. In fact, that will be what will make me watch Rave to the Grave and that other one, Necronopolis, I think it is. I'll get there. Evil Dead 2, which you mentioned. Zombieland, which I think Zombieland, because it's kind of like a later film, you know, and it doesn't get talked about that often.
That came at a time when there's saturation in the zombie genre and you know, it kind of injected that much needed comedy, and then everyone started copying, including Doghouse.
Exactly, you know?
That's a great film.
It's a great one. And then of course the modern classic, The Cabin in the Woods.
Dude, see,
we couldn't do a whole episode about Cabin in the Woods.
Well, and also you knew that question was coming, so you've had time to think about this.
I did, yeah. It was really quick though, because like House was the first thing that spawned it. Like that was.
I want to sit here and just like mull over it and think of like, you know, when you know how you and I get excited when someone says, "Oh, can you compile a list of your top 50 films?" And you put so much energy into it.
Oh, and then I just I get like 10 films into it. And I'm like, oh no, I'll never be able to win this. Like it doesn't work. Like that one you did where it's like name your favorite film of this year, and I went for like 3 years and I was like, no, I've agonized over this. I spent like an hour and a half and I'd only got through 3 years.
Dude, holy shit. How did I not think of Reanimator?
Oh, Reanimator, of course.
That's,
definitely.
That's my favorite above Brain Dead.
Yeah, right. So that's interesting you actually mentioned Brain Dead because New Zealand horror. I mean, there hasn't been a great deal of films, but the films that have come out have been pretty extraordinary, really. Yep. Everything from Death Warmed Up in the 80s through to Bad Taste, then all the Peter Jackson catalogue. In fact, if you listen to the commentary on Housebound, the amount of times Peter Jackson mentioned, they actually reference how many times they mention him, it's a drinking game unto its own.
Yeah,
you know, sure. I guess you can't talk about New Zealand horror without referencing Peter Jackson, or comedy horror, really.
You can't talk about the New Zealand film industry without him.
No, exactly. He's the backbone. He's really what gave New Zealand their film industry and their TV industry from everything from, I was going to say Xena and that, but that's Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert that were responsible for bringing Xena and Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Holy shit, that's going to come into this later too.
Right.
I have something to say about that.
Okay, oh, that's interesting.
What's that? He did that Silver Fly, was that what it was called? Like as a the mockumentary television?
Oh, the Silver Mountain, not Silver Mountain, Silver whatever. Silver, God, it's killing me. Forgotten Silver. Forgotten Silver?
If only you can see Jarrett's face.
Forgotten Silver, I think it was. And it, the beauty of the, like, it was like a modern War of the Worlds. Like they played it on New Zealand TV and people were convinced.
Fooled everyone.
Amazing, man. Amazing. It breaks my heart to think that the Peter Jackson, you know, horror comedies and just the bizarre exploitation kind of comedy like Meet the Feebles, all like, you know, these films are currently unavailable because there's the promise that Peter Jackson wants to go back and restore them and do all that sort of stuff, which I'm really cool and happy about. He said he was going to do it.
It's taking
his time. Taking a long time. It's taken longer than James Cameron is to release True Lies on Blu-ray because he wanted to make it into 3D. Fuck that, James. Let's just keep moving. Titanic didn't work out in 3D that well. You just need to get it out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, heartbreaking because I think there's a generation of kids that are missing out because by not having them on streaming services or not having them available on physical media, they're probably not films that they're going to torrent.
You leave
or
it too long, we won't
for.
Give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah,
and
yeah,
Brain Dead particularly. Yeah. I mean, he already gave Frightener special treatment with the DVD and then the Blu-ray.
Yeah, which is terrific. I guess because it's a studio film, he didn't own it,
but he still pumped out. He gave them all that footage that he had because he recorded everything.
I mean,
the
behind
video.
The scenes doco is like 3 hours or something.
Exactly,
it's extraordinary.
Right. So he needs to, like, because he wants to go and do that again. So fuck that. give us Brain Dead, like the definitive,
totally, you know, yeah,
in its Brain Dead form, not its Dead Alive form.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah, I don't want that Dead Alive cut.
And
I
give us the three cuts, because there's three cuts.
Yeah,
to
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, make it everything we deserve, but make it happen now. Make it happen now. So that's all we ask. I mean, the rest of your catalog's available. But yeah, Peter Jackson.
I also want to see him return to the genre.
Yeah, well, what? So the last horror film would have been The Frighteners.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he sort of went to Lovely Bones, which touched upon some kind of horror element.
Almost felt a bit like Heavenly Creatures as well.
It's like
me.
A companion film to that, yeah, for sure. Totally. But I would love to see him go back to some true horror. No, didn't he produce a horror film more recently? Can't think off the top of my head.
I almost feel like you're correct.
We should know.
We totally should know that. Peter Jackson presents. So yeah, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. Maybe there's not another horror movie produced.
I don't know.
But look, he sort of started off in a similar fashion to Gerard Johnson in that, you know, he was, well, I think he was actually shooting the films himself, like shot Bad Taste, but, you know, he certainly was editing, directing, producing, writing. And I mean, Gerard Johnson, he's written, produced, maybe co-produced, directed, and edited Housebound. So it's been a labor of love for him also. But, you know, and Gerard's had a background in working in TV. You know, he did a New Zealand TV series. I think it was like the Jackie Brown Diaries, but I don't think that's correct. I actually think it is, but it's Jackie spelt like
the other way.
Yeah, the other way. JAC. Who gives a shit? JAQ. Yeah. But I have read like the last few things he's been doing. He had, like, because when we spoke to him, he said he had a few interesting things in the pipeline that he was excited about, but he didn't really reveal.
Which gave you the impression it was feature film.
Totally, but it's just been TV.
Yeah,
it's
been TV. So he did what, Terry Teo?
Yep.
Which is based on a popular children's series of novels or books. Yep. Interestingly, I just discovered that he's behind a lot of the episodes of the new Legends of Monkey.
At least four of maybe the 13-odd episodes.
And that's why I wanted to mention Hercules and Xena, because this has that feel. Have you watched the trailer for this?
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know if it's landed yet, but having read that he did, well, I think, four or five episodes.
Yeah.
I wanted to check it out, so I watched the trailer, and it looks awful.
Yeah, right.
Like, it looks like a whitewashing of Monkey to begin with, right?
Wow, that's interesting.
Because these are sort of, it looks like they're Maori actors as opposed to sort of, you know, Asian actors.
Yeah, right.
There's a couple of Asians. The lead guy playing Monkey doesn't look all that similar to the previous incarnations. But it just had that real Hercules-Xena kind of look to it. Really cheesy.
Cheap and cheesy sort of vibe. Which is why I never got into Xena
It was too
Hercules.
Hokey for my liking.
Way too hokey. And I mean, they were still making kind of feature films that were B-movies that were better than serialized, like, sword and sandal shit.
Yeah. You know? But I guess, you know, this is something new for the people that were really into that. You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, those shows were so massive. And I certainly tried, and look, what it did was it created a television industry in New Zealand, thanks to Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert, that, you know, extended like to present day, like for obviously this Monkey series, but for like the Ash versus Evil Dead series and things of that nature. But I did also read,
which had Lucy Lawless in it.
Yes, Lucy Lawless. Yeah. Awesome. I was going to say Lucy Liu.
She's in the new Monkey.
Yeah. Oh, well, you never know.
She's not.
But I did also read, according to internet gossip, Jared's working on a Justice League film. But it's
Dark.
A dark Justice League film with like Swamp Thing.
But there's not a lot of information other than sort of IMDb attached him to it.
Yeah, some randos just put in all the details. Because like every now and again I'll look and I've been attached to something weird.
Yeah.
And but it'll be weird. Like I'll someone's attached me as the executive producer. My name's pretty, you know, uncommon. So it's like, oh, it's not that Jared Garner, it's the other Jared Garner.
Yeah, for people that don't know how IMDb works, you can just nominate someone. And it gives you an option of people that sound the same and you have to choose.
So I've been attached to stuff and I just, well, it takes the process, like, you know, and you detach yourself from it.
Dude, I saw your name attached to something called Before Their Time the other day.
I'd love to know more about that, Glenn. When do you reckon they'll reveal more information on that?
I have no idea. Coming soon to a fake shimp near you.
All right, well, I'll keep my eyes peeled and my ears.
Speaking of fake shimp and Evil Dead and Sam Raimi, that's where we get the name from. For people that don't know.
I like it when we occasionally get the message and like, oh, do you know about the connection with fake shimp? And you're like, oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, it's like, duh, no shit, Sherlock.
Viewlorium is the place to stream cult movies for free. Like, I'm talking mutated sharks, megastorms, exploitation, low-budget indies, and shit tons of other stuff. Viewlorium boasts a huge selection of the good, the bad, and the weird in between. FakeShep.net uses their service. Guilty as charged. Be rad like them. Vuelorium. Alternative streaming. Visit Vuelorium.com. Like, what now?
Don't forget to catch our other show, Franchised, where we dive into some of cinema's most memorable franchises.
Well, I don't know, because sometimes you come spelling, up with some of the randomest things. You were telling me in one episode about Blake Lively being related to Jason Lively, yeah. And that blew my mind. Yeah. So, you know,
got a shot. Last time I found out about the sex Mack? Cult, Alison Mack's sex cult. How come you guys are just like?
How come we're all over it, Jared?
I don't know so much. Every time I show up, you guys are like, no. Here's another sex pass for you.
You can show your support by liking our social media pages, subscribing to our channels, and sharing us with your friends. We're on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and a whole bunch of other places. Or you can keep it simple and visit our website at fakechimp.net.
What are you going to do against a hostile spirit?
I'm going to smash it in the face.
You've watched this film more times than I have. I have watched it with the audio commentary, though, and I learned a lot from the audio commentary, some of which I did mention early. My favourite thing I learned from the audio commentary is that in New Zealand, they call speed bumps judder bars.
Jutta-bars.
A judder bar. And as soon as it came on, I said to Danny, I was like, judder bar? This is the bedroom. It's like, what? And I'm like, judder bar? And she's like, what? What's a judder bar? I'm like, it's a speed bump.
Judder bar, isn't it like the remake of Babadook?
The judder bar. It's a New Zealand remake. It's much funnier,
Speaking
though.
Speaking of remakes, there's a Hollywood remake.
I know, this has been talked about since, like, literally since 2015 when the film was, like, you know, widely released. It's been talked about, but I've seen nothing of it. I even Googled it, trying to find more info, but I can't find anything current.
Maybe they can get Gus Van Sant onto the case.
Oh, geez, that would be incredible. He could remove all the humour and make it an absolute atrocity. I trust him to do it. I mean, I've seen some of his latter work, and I did not enjoy it. Elephant, I did not like it. You don't mind Elephant.
I love that whole trilogy.
What was the others?
You had, Elephant... Last Days.
And Jerry, was that part of it? I love Jerry, man. I love it. I was watching, I was like, when's this shot going to end? I was just watching him cross the whole entire desert in one shot. It's ridiculous.
That's the whole film.
Was it really in one shot?
Mostly. No, because it cuts to different angles, but it's the one scene.
Right.
The whole film is them walking.
I was hungover when I watched that movie and I was like,
Did you watch it through to the end?
Yeah, I watched all of it because I was like, the end, because, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler, it kills him.
Yeah.
And he's left to his own devices to walk across the desert. But it felt like, when's he going to leave frame? He's just walking. He's just walking. And I was like, it's like watching an ant move.
So is it the whole gist of that trilogy is it's sort of... humans turn in upon themselves.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and in the case of Last Days, it's the fictionalized version of Kurt Cobain's last moments.
That's the one I haven't watched with Michael Pitt. Yeah. Michael Pitt, yeah. I haven't watched it.
Anyway, that's...
Are you sure Psycho's not part of it? Because that sounds like humanity turning against humanity by doing something awful.
That was Gus Van Sant turning on his fans.
Yeah, that was. What an asshole. Yeah, look...
Pissing straight into the mouth of Alfred Hitchcock's corpse.
I got nothing else to say about Gus Van Sant. Do I have anything else to say about the commentary? It's got Ant Timpson on it, who's a pretty famous New Zealand producer. He produced The Greasy Strangler, The ABCs of Death movies, most recently The Field Guide to Evil. Terrific New Zealand producer, and he's on there with the director Jared Johnson, producer Luke Sharp. And they're drinking throughout the commentary.
Oh,
they crack a bottle of 2011 champagne that they'd been saving for when the film wrapped, and then it just kept going and going and going. So they finally drink it when they're doing the commentary.
So what you're saying is that everyone should buy the film.
Yeah, you should own it. You should own it. And if you do own it, or if you want to buy it, the version you have to buy is the Australian, possibly New Zealand release. I assume it's the same. Because ours is at 25 frames per second on the Blu-ray and DVD, whereas the US, they've slowed it down to 24 frames per second. So... it's one of those kind of weird things. Normally, they speed things up.
It won't look quite right.
Yeah, it won't sound right because you'll suddenly... The voices will sound slowed down or sped up. Slowed down, yes. Or sped up. Sped up? I don't know. Anyway.
Your voice just went slow.
No, it did all of that. apart from the commentary, it's also got 3 deleted scenes. Pretty easy to see why these deleted scenes didn't make the film, but there's a little title card before each that explains why they were cut from the film. Really cool. Apart from that, I think this is a bunch of trailers and that beautiful artwork.
Yeah, cool cover.
Magnificent artwork. And if you're like Glenn, you might even have a signed copy of it. So, yeah, look, I don't have anything more to say about Housebound other than if you haven't seen it, you shouldn't have listened to this podcast. You should have waited because we've ruined it. Actually, we really haven't. Like, one of the other things I will mention is
No, we've totally ruined
it. We've totally ruined a lot of it, but I'm going to ruin more just before. Because I figure, like, if you've listened this far, you should have the film completely ruined for you. But obviously, yes, you've got that whole Black Christmas people under the stairs thing, the hider in the house aspect, which was a massive, massive surprise, you know, for me. Like,
changing legend of Hell House. Incredible. These are all influences.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's another film I mentioned, but it's too contemporary that I don't want to ruin that movie. All I can say is that I turned to the wife during this movie when we saw play in theaters in the US, and I said, this is exactly the ending from Housebound. And I was like, they've just ripped off.
Tell me and I'll beep it. Tell me and I'll beep it. Oh my God! Oh. Yes.
Please tell me you've seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank God. Because I was like, could ruin the movie for you. yeah, look, that's pretty much all I've got to say before we kind of, you know, wrap it up. Yep. I do want to thank the Screaming Meanies.
Of course.
For their incredible intro and outro music. I don't think it would be the same podcast if we didn't have the talented Screaming Meanies supply the music. Glenn, is there anything more that you want to say about Housebound or New Zealand horror, New Zealand humour? Anything in general?
No, not particularly. I'll get
Gus
back
Van
to
Sant?
One New Zealand film I'd like to throw to, I mention this every now and then, it used to be an obscurity and a guilty pleasure for me, is a film called The Ugly, a New Zealand horror film that is just abstract and surreal and abnormal, has an actress from Full Frontal in it.
Right. So there's that's a weird tie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a strange, strange film. Yeah. If you've never seen it, it's hard to find, but look for it.
Yeah, yeah. Because you, I remember you actually covered it on a previous podcast. It's one of those obscure... probably a gem or something of that
nature. That's all of
one of those things. Yeah.
Put it this way, there's a lot of bloodletting and all the blood's black.
Wow.
With no explanation.
I feel like you've told me that before. And I still haven't seen this film. I remember it coming out and I just never saw it. But it got a wider release overseas. Yeah. Like, it's not available on DVD locally. No. You got the US DVD from memory. Yeah. Oh, unusual. Anyway, I think that's really it.
That is it. I'll let you know how viewing number 5 goes.
Six. Is it six?
Oh,
or five, right. Oh, excellent, dude. You'll have seen it more times than I have by the time I die. Anyway, thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon.